It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, a discussion with leaders who share their pathways to success. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning and welcome to Success Happens. It is such a pleasure to be here this morning with all of you, and I really love the conversation we're going to have, because I think for everyone on the planet, this is one conversation that we can all be committed to, because there is, in my view, nothing more important than education. And that education can take lots of shapes and forms. It can be vocational education. It can be mastering your craft as a seamstress or as a plumber, an electrician. Whatever it is, bettering ourselves through knowledge is so critical to success. So I wanted to continue our conversation with this education piece. And I have with me today Dr. April Miller, who's a member of the Board of Education in Frederick County. And, you know, we know that this is a regional show and there are people listening from, you know, southern Pennsylvania and West Virginia and over to Howard County and, you know, northern Montgomery County. So there's lots of folks listening that aren't necessarily Frederick County residents. But this is this education conversation is something that we're all interested in. It's kind of like music. It's a universal thing. And so I'm really excited to have a conversation about how can we continue to have cause success through education, and where are the opportunities for improvement in ourselves or in the system? And so welcome, April.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's so fun to have you here. And so just as a little background, you know, April and I got to know each other in the 2014 election cycle, and just always enjoyed your very down-to-earth, easygoing way of being. So thank you for bringing that to the Board of Ed and to leadership. And I think, you know, when you're a leader in an organization like a Board of Ed, you're a leader among leaders in many industries, because, you know, we look at leaders, and I can learn from leaders in any industry, even if they're not professional communicators like myself or they do something else. I can always learn. And so I have this passion for learning. And so just so you know, I went back to school 2010. And I completed my degree. It was undergrad, but you know what? After 25 years, I finished. Yep. And so I'm always a proponent that people go back to school and pick up where you left off and keep growing and going. Mm-hmm. So that being said, it's really great to have you here. And I wanted to also, kind of delve with you to begin with here into why you chose the Board of Ed, because with your background, you could have chosen lots of things. So why did you choose to be of service in the educational system?
Well, for me, it was my children, and home is where your heart is. And when I saw my daughter, who is now graduated and at Mount St. Mary's and doing very well in communications, I might add, she's doing fabulous. But when she was in fourth grade and fifth grade, we had a little something called Turk Math in Frederick County. And just real quick, that caused a lot of issues and a lot of problems. And it's in some ways similar to Common Core, what we've been dealing with. But so I felt like the Board of Ed was not responsive, and I thought it wasn't responsive to the community overall. And so that became the overarching thing, is I wanted a Board of Ed that was more responsive to parents and involved parents and the community in learning, and that, you know, period. And so I kept thinking, okay, if not me, then who? Who's going to step up and advocate? So I was not political. I was not well known in the political community.
By the way, that is such a fresh breath of fresh air. It really is, because we love getting newbies involved. At least I do. I think it's great. It brings a fresh perspective.
I had no experience at all whatsoever with any of that. I don't like I don't even enjoy the political part of the campaigning process. But when I got third in the primary, it was completely shocking. I think Adam Avery called me and he said, and I was in Costco, and he said, doing the mom thing. And he said to me, he's like, I tried to find out information about you. And I was like, he's like, I couldn't find anything. And I'm like, yeah, that's supposed to be a good thing, right? I mean, you're not supposed to be able to dig all this stuff up under the radar. Exactly. That's supposed to be a good thing. So anyway, it's been a fabulous experience. Education is my passion. My family is my passion. And so I feel like the perspective that I bring as a parent is incredibly valuable. And being part of the community and in the community all the time really just brings my perspective to the board.
And by the way, you are highly educated. I mean, you have your doctorate.
Yes.
You are an optometrist by trade.
Yes.
So you have done the education thing for a long, 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 long
Here.
Time.
I graduated from Middletown.
Yeah.
In 88.
Mm-hmm. So a local girl.
Yep.
And so when you saw the value, I'm assuming, of what education did for you, I'm just taking you back even before you had children, right? I mean, even as women today, you know, we, in order for us to compete in the workforce, we need to be as educated as our male counterparts, right? So good for you. You went on and became a doctor of optometry. And you practiced locally. Now, so I got the piece about why you chose the Board of Ed. When you came into it in 2010, that's when you were first elected, what did you go to work on that was...
That's kind of... I laugh because we went to work on a lot of things right away. One was getting rid of Turk math. And that first meeting was very... I don't. If you ever go back and watch that first meeting when we were first elected, it was very interesting. I don't know that I would go back and do that again. I've learned a lot as a board member. I've progressed a lot. But that first meeting, we got a lot done. And we also brought...
So wait, what was the outcome? I'm assuming you got rid of
it. We did. Yeah. Yes, we did.
Okay. But in getting rid of something, you have to replace it with something.
We replaced, yes. And it wasn't as simple. You can't just like Common Core, you can't just pull something out that has been
and leave
a void. So we were actually very systemic or systematic about how we did that, how we approached it. We did forums for researching the new resources and what resource we were going to use for the curriculum, because the curriculum didn't change. It was actually the resource that we were using was changing. But the resource drives a lot of the instruction. So you can say it's just a resource, it's just a book, it's just
Well, we call it a source document.
Yeah, a source document. It drives the instruction. So it really plays a big role. And then your philosophical viewpoint, because we had a lot of the theory of mathematics without a lot of the process and the dynamics of just even memorization of your multiplication tables and things like that. So when we wanted to relook at how we were doing math and kind of come together. And then the other big one was Frederick Classical Charter School and bringing that back up, because that was huge. For they were denied by the previous board. Donna Crook was able to bring it. We were able to bring
it
back.
Were they seen as competition for FCPS?
I'm not sure. I love the classical curriculum. I love the school. I love the use of the Singapore math. I love the integration of the curriculum. They're doing a fabulous job. And what I see is, especially with our Monocacy Montessori and with Frederick Classical, they are actually like kind of incubators for the public school system. So you can use...
They're testing new methodologies.
One big one with Montessori that's huge right now is they use Orton-Gillingham, which is being used for students who have dyslexia. We're having a issue with our students with dyslexia right now. We've had a lot of parents come before the board. Orton-Gillingham is one of the tried and true measures of helping our students with dyslexia. We have a Montessori program that's actually been using that for years. So that's kind of like a pilot program. So you mentioned a pilot program. We've already been doing it. So those kind of things, just the different... it broadens our education. It broadens our education
base
with
smart.
The charters.
I mean, you're sharing resources.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you do that if your goal is to improve the success of students however they need to learn?
Exactly. And so the charter schools, you know, whether I'm not going to get in the political aspect of it, but the charter schools truly allow just that difference in education and the difference in the philosophies, and it's beautiful. It's actually I like it. I really like the variety.
We all could learn more about looking from different viewpoints to learn and grow and morph things for improved outcomes. You know, I think we have to be more open. So it sounds like you have brought that value to the work that you guys are doing in the Board of Ed and Frederick County Public Schools. And I do want to, you know, acknowledge Dr. Albin mm-hmm. because she's been on the show and had a wonderful conversation with her. And so one of the things that the Board of Ed does is that you hire the superintendent mm-hmm.
yes.
of schools.
Yes.
So correct. In essence, you're her boss.
Well, yes.
Kind of.
Correct.
Yeah.
That is a correct statement. We are actually, she is the only employee that the board technically has.
Okay, there you go.
So, yes.
So, are you pleased with your employee?
Yes, she's actually, good. I mean, one of the big things when we hired her was the community outreach. And I think she has done a great job. She's done a great job with building businesses and our businesses' communication. You know, we're learning to think outside the box as far as the Links program at Frederick High. And Frederick High is absolutely gorgeous. And welcome home all our Frederick High students. Absolutely, you know, fabulous. So I think as long as we can keep that perspective of the open, out-of-the-box thinking and how we as Frederick County are going to deal with some of these issues and mandates that come up, then we're going to keep moving forward.
So when you talk about issues and mandates, one of the things that comes mm-hmm. up is the idea of maintenance of effort mm-hmm. and how do you fund things. Mm-hmm. And I know back in 2014, that was a big conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, obviously we had just come through a horrific financial, yes. Not just downturn. I think it was far worse than just a downturn. You know, and frankly, I see on the human services side, people still dealing with the aftermath of lost income and lost employment or lower incomes as a result of lost employment. They're unemployed. They're underemployed. And so, you know, that's had a huge hit on families. But when you look back at 2014, this idea of maintenance of effort was to maintain the funding because that's what the minimum requirement was. Mm-hmm. And then there was a discussion, well, there was more needed mm-hmm. that maintenance of effort couldn't cause. And I'm kind of fast forwarding, but and then they implemented some new technology improvements, which I was really in favor of. I mean, I think that was brilliant. Where are you in maintenance of effort mandates and also this technological boost that needed to happen at
where
these school systems?
Where am I personally?
Well, you as a Board of Ed. Can you speak as a board member?
Yes. So as a board member, especially with all the changes, we had major overhauls to the curriculum with Common Core, with the math, the English language arts, and that's, you know, all started around 2012, and you're building that, you're building programs. We have something called Next Generation Science Standards that have started, and it's something called C3, which is your college civic or college career in civic. And that is an overhaul of the whole social studies program, which you should do a whole show on that one.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah, the science and the so total overhauls of curriculum. Then you had the overhaul of the testing. You had PARC testing come in, and that mandated a lot of the technology infrastructure needs that that needed to be updated. So
now you're talking about at the level of
that's the state level, that's operations.
Yes. I'm talking about the level of education for the kids,
but it's all related.
Okay, good.
Okay, so how it's all related is because PARC is an online testing version. They had some pen and paper when they were piloting, but it's mainly an online testing. So you think about it. If you do not have the infrastructure, we only used computer labs. Our way of educating was totally different. Then we had computer labs.
None
of that were connected. None of them were updated. We had, like, I don't know, a 30-year computer replacement cycle or something, you know, crazy like that. So to be able to build that infrastructure, it's expensive to do that, but it was required for the testing. And how many kids are you testing in a day? You have to have the computers for it. So it really kind of put a fast forward on everything. In our schools, we've tried to go one-to-one.
Which, frankly, I got to say this,
right.
is probably a great, that pushed outcome. It forced you. Because
to make the changes quicker.
Yeah, if you hadn't, how long would this have taken? Forever.
Right. Well, the only issue I have with it is that there's a lot of studies on PARC testing and the pen and paper version versus the computer version. The computer version, you actually have to be able to use the tools. You have to have you're testing their typing skills. So you're testing a lot of the skills that aren't mainly the content of the material that
they
know.
What we call soft skills.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that can actually impact, obviously, the scores and the learning. So there's a lot to that conversation as well.
Well, let's, when mm-hmm. we come back, we're going to take sure. a quick break. We'll delve further into that. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me today Dr. April Miller, member of the Board of Education in Frederick County. And you're listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Sweeties on the Creek, We're Scooping Now, and Xerox Complete Document Solutions. And we'll be right back. 9 a.m. on Free Talk 930 WFMD. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jen Charlton, and I have with me today Dr. April Miller. And we're talking with April about, you know, some of the improvements in this technology. And, you know, it was an interesting time. I think technology has progressed so rapidly lately. It's like lightning speed, and trying to keep the systems in which we operate functional or even sufficient. It really takes something, not only just money, but also time and talent to bring it to fruition. So you were talking before the break about PARC and the impact of that online testing mm-hmm. to the infrastructure of the FCPS system. Mm-hmm. How then, continue where we left off about that, you know, how do you see that progressing, and what was the impact of that?
The impact of PARC, I said, getting ready, you have certain timelines that the state sets, and you have to meet those timelines. We have schools that are open schools. We have schools like Frederick High that did not have the ability to improve the infrastructure enough to have the technology there. Obviously, that's one of the reasons we have a new school, just because of the state of that school is in. So when you have to level...
In other words, the capacity of the infrastructure, the building structures...
The literal infrastructure of the building couldn't handle the technology needs that we have. Gotcha. We have that in many schools across the system. So when you are doing a state testing now that's more than just pen and paper, you have to kind of level the playing field from a technology standpoint, not only in Frederick County, but across the state. Every school system was dealing with this. So, you know, I think we need to keep looking at where we've come with that, where we still need to be, and how much it's impacting us on, you know, our testing situation. And I think the state needs to continue to look at the impact of using the computers for testing purposes. Versus pen and paper.
Well, and it sounds to me like we're not going back.
No, I don't think we're going back, but we have to mitigate some of the issues going forward, especially for our special ed students, you know, especially for our ELL students. So not only are you having to learn the reading and the language, and but then you're also being tested on your computer skills. So we really, that is part of when you look at data and when you look at results and things like that, you have to look at the big picture and look at all the things that are going on in the testing situation, not just the test result itself. So it's very interesting.
To speak it in layman terms, it's not just 2 + 2 = 4. It is how did you communicate that through the machine? Because if you don't have typing skills, if you have perhaps a disability and you can't use a mouse or whatever that looks
yes.
You have to take all that stuff into consideration.
And sometimes there are some accommodations that they can use. So I guess another piece of the puzzle with PARC, and there have been some research on the difference between the online version versus the pen and paper, and especially with your higher level maths and your higher level Englishes, because that's a lot to type out. If you're having to type out a very long response, it's a lot to type out.
You have to have good typing skills.
Yes.
So I would think, though, in parsing out success versus where there's need for improvement in this issue around PARC and Common Core, you would want to separate the populations that you're dealing with so that you could compare them within that universe of people similarly. So in other words, if you're dealing with a student who has a disability, that collection of students needs to be tested similarly. You can't compare them to the regular population of people who may not be suffering that form of disability or have that issue, right? So I would assume you would actually... So, okay. Now, that may be...
Yeah.
So educate me about that. Because it seems to me you can't... Back to what you're saying, if they don't have the soft skills to do the typing like I can do because I have full capacity there, how do you not...
So the studies that have shown one of the things that the studies that have shown as far as the typing skills, that students who have one-to-one or who are using computers every day, like, you know, in class all the time, they do better on tests. Well, the PARC Well, of course they do, because they're using the technology every single day. So it's kind of very interesting how that works, but that's going to work across populations. So the more exposure you have to that device or using learning with the computer.
And those modifications, I would assume.
And the modifications.
Somebody with disability.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So it depends on the level of your disability. They are having more of an alt MSA, that if your disability does take you to a level where you're not compared with your typical peer counterparts, we have an alternative testing method for it. But most of the time, that's why our special ed results are where they are. They're very, very low compared to a lot of that is one of the huge gaps that we have, that we still have. And so everybody
is increasing.
Oh, the solution for special ed, we are working on a complete overhaul as far as our special ed. We just had our special ed update. We're doing more personalized learning for our students. But the bottom line is you have to reach each and every student where they are. You have to be able to intervene early. You have to be able to provide the interventions and the professional development and the resources that each child needs. And then you have to be able to adapt the education style to fit that student.
Okay, so mm-hmm. looking at capacity and cost, because that's where we start this conversation, therefore you would need more educators who can address those concerns with those students one-on-one. So how many students, again, I'm not educated in this area, so how many students in the special education field to one educator? Do you get what I'm asking? What's the ratio?
Okay. Yeah, so one of the changes that we made, we used to do it basically just population-based on how many kids were in the school. That's how many special ed educators that you received for that school. Now we're doing it more what's called census-based, so based on the needs of the students and the student populations at the individual school.
Very good.
So, so that is a big change that we're trying to help address, because, you know, one school with 500 kids might have, 15 special ed students. Another school might have 100 with different hours and different needs and different abilities of those students and different focus groups. We have, a huge variety of our special ed population, and we need to reach them. We need to be able to reach
them. Oh, I love that you're saying you reach them where they are.
Where they are, yeah.
And by the way, that's true for every human mm-hmm. being.
Absolutely.
I mean, we all are mm-hmm. are wherever we are in our, what I like to say, our mm-hmm. evolution. So, so when you go back to this idea of funding mm-hmm. and the cost of education, I think mm-hmm. the budget, it's more than 50% of the county budget mm-hmm. here in Frederick County mm-hmm. is education. So it's mm-hmm. an enormous chunk of money. And it's important that we fund education, clearly. So how do you address that going forward in terms of where you are now and any sort of upcoming needs that you see? Because I'm imagining you're in the technological improvement curve mm-hmm. and we've accomplished what we have and there's more to get. So,
well, just like with every organization, I mean, we have so much of our budget is tied up in staffing. And so anytime you do any increase or anything like that, it increases your budget. So you have those. We just went to a new salary scale to try to allow for some differentiated pay for teachers to kind of get them
to stay here in the county.
To stay here in the county.
Yeah.
That is one of the things. And so we've been working on some initiatives like that, which is, again, a very, very expensive initiative. And when you have a focus on that, it makes it hard to do some of the other things that we were talking about as far as the outside of the box thinking and the new programs.
So you have to blend it, right? Salary with.
Okay. Yes.
We're going to take
a
quick break. It's mm-hmm. it's just wonderful to have you here. Dr. April Miller, member of the Board of Education, Frederick County. You're listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping now. And you're listening to Free Talk 930 WFMD. We'll be right back.
A service of Mobile Tire Guys. They come to you.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me today Dr. April Miller, member of the Board of Education, Frederick County. And I want to invite people, if you'd like to call in, you're welcome to. We have the call-in lines open if anybody has a question or a comment. 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. All right, so we were talking about PARC and some of the impacts of that testing on certain populations of students. I'd like to chat briefly about Common Core, and I want to just reference something. A couple weeks ago, I had an interview with Kathy Afzali, who was on air, and we talked briefly about Common Core. I think we spent a minute and a half. Anyway, I don't profess to be an expert on Common Core, but from my perspective, as I mentioned in that show, and I'll say it again, that conversation is not certainly what it was in 2014 in terms of the heated issues of the day. It's dissipated a bit. So there's been a progression. It's been implemented. It's a federal thing. And at the state level, the governor has, you know, it is what it is. So where are we on Common Core from your perspective as a member of the board? So we can get that accurately stated.
Where we are, we've been implementing Common Core for several years. And as I told you, we're also working on our next generation science standard and the C3, which is for social studies. And actually, those will all be integrated in then with the English language arts and the math.
And that's all
all of Maryland.
But that's all part of this Common Core
that is all
implementation.
Yes, but I think because, in my opinion, I think since Common Core got such a negative name for the language arts and the math, they kind of switched it to the next generation in C3. Topics. So yes.
They who? Locally or state or federal?
That's more national.
Okay, yeah, got that. So it shifted away from the conversation Common Core to something else.
The nomenclature changed so we could pretend it was something different. That's my personal opinion
okay.
about
but
how that
But it's all
happened.
About the evolution
of
educational.
The changes to curriculum, yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So talk about that.
Okay. So as we're going with Common Core, like I said, it's being implemented to just completely remove it at this point would be incredibly difficult because it's been so integrated into our curriculum. And we have had some positives. There are some positives, just like anything. So
Such as? What are some of the positives?
Some of the positives are it did increase the what we call the rigor, and I use that word, you know, overuse it, increase the rigor, and it increased the complexity of the standards that we're using. So it definitely did that. It also increased
the— And that's a good thing.
Yes, that is
okay.
a good thing.
Okay.
You want to be able to increase, you know, across the board, your education. You want to keep moving forward. You want to be able to increase those standards. Then it also increased, which was one of the things that I actually liked about Common Core, is the use of original source documents. So if you were studying the Constitution, you would actually, you know, be reading the Constitution, which I love.
Not somebody's interpretation of it.
Exactly. So more focus on source documents, reading. And I really liked cross-content, and so across the subject matters and integrating your core subjects to promote learning. So it gives you a broader perspective. So for instance, my daughter was studying printing press in history and in English. So it gives you that cross-content. It's actually more of a classical type education.
Multiple perspectives on the same issue. Love
about,
it.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
You know what I call that?
That was one of the things I
call
liked.
That's like looking at things from like an octagon. You're looking at it from many, many, many sides, and then you get a fuller perspective of the thing that you're studying.
Correct.
I love that. Okay,
correct.
Go ahead.
So again, that was one of the things I actually liked
about
that. And then you have a broader accountability, either using your Smarter Balance or your PARC assessment. Based on the standards, you kind of have a broader accountability other than just the state of Maryland. So we could do more comparison. Now, a lot of states have pulled out of PARC assessments because of some of the issues that we had talked about. And again, that's a whole show you could do. But so there isn't as much of a comparison as we would have liked, but Maryland is not one of those states that has pulled out of PARC.
Yeah, but
PARC
there's still
assessment.
How many people participating?
I don't know. It might it might only be down to like 10. I'm not sure the exact
states.
But
it's still enough to sample and compare.
There's still a comparison base.
Although you could say, because it's political, the ones who pulled out would have a certain type of learning because it would probably be a more conservative state versus a more liberal state. If you were to really parse it out that way, it might be that those 10 remaining are in a similar or political kind of
That could be true. I haven't actually looked at it through that
could
lens,
be,
but it could be.
Know, just to compare apples to apples. But
correct.
All right, okay,
so,
go ahead.
So that was some of the strengths that I saw. And then some of the weaknesses that I see with Common Core is that there is a huge focus on reading and language ability, even in math. Okay, and that was one of the issues with Turk Math. So you think about what we talked about, your special ed students, your students with dyslexia, your students who are just learning English and haven't had the 3 to 7 years that it takes to fully develop a language to be able to, and now you throw them into having to read extensive paragraphs to be able to do their math problem.
Rather than to use
a basic
the symbolic
math, or even just a base. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of language. Put it this way: when my son was in third grade and we were transitioning to Common Core, I basically needed a dictionary to look help him with his homework for math because of the vocabulary and things that they were using. So it really was quite a change. I think some are getting used to that, but then so that leaves me into the next thing.
Can you give some insight as to why they would make it more narrative? I would call it narrative math.
That's the philosophical difference with the math, where you have to have your balance between your how you think about math versus how you actually do the function of math.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
I'm a layman, so I can
right,
interpret.
The
thinking behind
the math,
the
and
learning
how, exactly,
I get
and
that.
How you look, and so, but you have to have that balance between the actual functional skill of doing the math and your rote memorization, your math facts, like I said, and to be able to have that number fluency versus that deeper understanding of the math.
Okay, got
so that. they're trying to balance, and that's what we as Frederick County, that's why I said that's what has to be our overarching principle, is to be able to keep both. And I don't know where we are on that right now, but that's where that's some of the struggle. And I think that's some of the struggle as you go, especially into your middle school years, with the math. I think that's definitely a struggle, and I have an example of that in a second. But the other thing is, it might not be developmentally appropriate. So that's the other thing we have to look at with your cognitive development of students. Everyone goes from concrete, your absolutes, at a different time than your abstract, to be able to think abstractly. And so they try to push that abstract thinking way down into the lower grades. And some kids are just not going to be ready for that.
Well, and
even be able to do it.
It could make it very frustrating. Because I'm thinking of my son who's six, you know. He could be very frustrated
if he doesn't
get it, he's going to get really frustrated, and then he'll get discouraged, and then he'll give up.
Yes. And so that's what we don't want to see. And that's where I said, that's where I think, especially with our English language learners and our special ed students, that's where we really have to pay attention to how we're teaching them, what we're teaching them. And I think we really need to, at some point, take a step back and look, how is this impacting those students with the curriculum? So the other is that lack of flexibility. So we want rigorous standards, but we also know that we need kind of a scaffolding to get students there. So I think you should have a basic kind of standard.
I'm a layman, I'm going to interpret.
Sure.
Back to meeting the student where they are.
Yes.
You have to have some flexibility to do that.
Exactly, because you can't, if you're this curriculum, the other thing is it moves very, very quickly, especially at that middle school level. They might have 2 days to teach a concept. Well, there are students that need more than those 2 days. So then if you don't have that time, or if you can't scaffold that instruction to be able to teach them that content, and then you're moving on to something else. And then you talk about the frustration. And then so that's like a downward cycle of where you don't want to be. So that's where we're trying to work on more personalized learning, differentiated instruction. I had a history teacher tell me she has, in one class, she has everything from our highly able student to our honors to what we call a merit student, an on-grade student, and then a co-taught, which are some of our special ed students that need that extra support and help. She has all four in one class. And she's able to personalize that learning through her wow. computers, her Google Classroom, where they're all working on the same content, but just at different levels.
Wow, I think that would take a lot of skill set on the part of the
huge
teacher.
Huge skill set, amazingly skillful teachers.
And to, yeah, yes. And so kudos to them. I can see that. You know, one of my things, so I'm a snow skier, right? So I've always said I want to ski with people better than me because they push me to be the best skier I can be.
Correct.
So if I'm a student and I'm struggling, let's say I'm a merit student, which probably for most of my career I was. I mean, to be honest with you, as a student, you know, I wasn't stellar. I'm a late bloomer. But anyway, but that being said, if I'm around students who are smarter than me, or more advanced than me, or more adept at something than me, I can learn from them and get it through, I'm going to say osmosis almost. But if you separate us into the separate populations, I don't have the benefit of that interaction.
There, yes, and there is some philosophical discussion there as well. So right. How do you group that? But if you don't have that personalized learning, and then you also don't want to hold other kids that grasp things very quickly, because then you have the opposite problem where you don't want to hold them back from being able to reach their full potential either, because you need to meet where they are as well.
That's
the creative part. So yeah. That's where some of the things that we're doing are really exciting as far as that, but that takes a huge skill set on the teacher, and they have to be able to have the tools and the resources to be able to do that. So I would like to see that more reflected in the standards that we're trying to teach, to be able to really to look at
to
kids,
train the trainers,
to just have this honest conversation about that. This is where we are, okay, State Board of Ed, or you know who, you know, wherever. This is where we are in Frederick County. This is where we are in Maryland. This is the struggles that we're having. So let's actually come together, have a conversation about where we see the weaknesses.
Deal with the gaps.
Deal with the gaps. And here's where we see that we can move forward, you know, as a state together and all work together on it.
I think that's a brilliant place to take a pause and go to a break. But that being said, I want to emphasize what you're saying. Gaps are good. Gaps are opportunities.
Gaps are opportunities.
And if we have to be willing to look at those gaps in a way that is empowering, not mm-hmm. disempowering.
Correct.
So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens with Jen Charlton. You've been listening to Dr. April Miller, member of the Board of Education in Frederick County. And this is Free Talk 930. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me today Dr. April Miller, member of the Board of Education, and a doctor in optometry, so highly educated, and brings her talents and experience to bear on the Board of Ed. And we were talking before the break about gaps and identifying the strengths and weaknesses of the current evolution of curriculum in mm-hmm. education. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, there was one more point you wanted to make,
right,
April.
There's one more point about this transition in curriculum. We have a focus on critical thinking. You hear a lot of the buzzword of critical thinking and problem solving, and that's what we're focused on. But we have to really be careful that our critical thinking isn't only one way of thinking. And I'll give you an example.
Oh, I
like,
love that.
You can critically think, but you have to critically think my way. Okay, so you have to be very careful about that. And I'll give you an example from.
I think we have a name for that. It's called brainwashing.
Yeah, it is. And this is where Comic Core again can get a bad rap. So another seventh grader comes home with a worksheet of math, right, to do. There's not really a lot of instruction. There's just a lot of problems. So she gets her dad to help her because she doesn't quite understand it. And she kept saying, Dad, I don't think that's the way we're supposed to do this. Dad, I don't think this is the way we're supposed to do this. She gets all the, turns her paper in. She gets all the answers right. She had understand how her dad taught her. However, she doesn't get the worksheet right because she did not do the work the way that she was supposed to do it. So here, she was critically thinking. She problem solved. She didn't know how to do it, so she went for help. Her dad's an aerospace engineer.
Okay.
So he pretty much has a really good grasp of math. She got all the problems right, but we're not going to celebrate that part of it. We're going to not give her a good grade because she didn't do it the right way. So that's not critical thinking to me.
Well,
or problem solving.
It's also not impressive in terms of an educational system that allows for a creative thinking.
Right. And yeah.
For solutions
right.
that may not be in that box.
Right. Or it was in the box that we as parents grew up on, and now it's in a different box because of how we're teaching.
But
it's
which box is right?
Different.
There's
exactly.
no box that's
There's
just
no box
right. Okay,
right,
we have a call on that note. We
sure.
have a caller, and I Bob, you have something you'd like to share?
Yeah, I've been listening to this conversation and was a teacher for 35 years. So I got a little bit of a background in this. And I think part of the problem is that we've gotten ourselves in education to the point where we've got too many Indian chiefs and not enough braves. Everybody, there's only so many numbers and so many letters, and so many ways you can put them in certain ways. But somebody has to come up with a different way, like the example you just gave, a different way of handling those numbers. And it may or may not be what that child thinks or how that child thinks. We started this years ago when all of a sudden somebody proclaimed, and I think it was Dr. Noel Farmer who was here, every child must graduate high school with, you know, an algebra class. Okay, well, there's not every student who's able to grasp an academic algebra class. So what did they do? I hate to use the word, they dumbed it down. They made it into Algebra 1, Algebra 1A. They, you know, did all kinds of things so that kids could get a, quote, algebra credit. And whether they needed that, now, they may well use algebra every day, but they use it in a different way. They use trigonometry. They use it in a different way. They don't sit down and do the academic thing. And I think that's where we've gotten the problem. We've got teachers that are told every 2 to 3 years that they've got to teach the same 10 numbers and 26 letters in a different fashion. And that's wrong.
Thank you, Bob, for your comment. Do you have anything you want to say about that, April, in terms of his insight as a former teacher?
I think that in this whole college and career readiness, we have forgotten a lot about the career and how many successful opportunities there are for career. And that's why we've been working with the governor's office as far as using the internship programs, as far as with the Links program, the career opportunities. The apprenticeship program that Kelly Schultz is doing. So there's a lot to that. So I understand what he's saying. We really need to focus on bringing that breadth of opportunities.
Yeah, very good. Well, I think as we look at the future of education, obviously it's I think in the middle of a big shift. And you know, I look back to, in fact, I was looking over your bio, and one of the things you had said you wanted to do was advocate for full funding of all mandates. That was one of the things. I'm going back a bit. I told her I was going to do this to what she promised to do in her reelection.
Nothing like accountability.
And then you said, other than the budget, what is the school system's biggest challenge in the next 4 years? You said steady erosion of local control and parent input on education, rapid transition to Common Core and park assessments, impacts on student learning, graduation requirements, teacher evaluations and privacy, digital conversion of classrooms. That's something we've been talking about, which was really important. Mm-hmm. So anything about that? Do you feel like you've been getting the job done in terms of what you envisioned at that point when you were going for reelection?
I do, and I like looking back, even back to what I had said in 2010, and it's like, I don't feel like I made, you know, campaign promises. I really feel like it's the bringing the parent perspective, bringing that knowledge, and like I said, bringing the community aspect, and that's what I feel like I have been successful in becoming a board that listens and becoming a board that actually respects the community input, and that is incredibly important to me, and it runs the gamut across all subjects, whatever we're talking about.
Well, and I think we can't go without acknowledging Brad Young for his leadership.
Absolutely.
As the chair of the board.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see in terms of your future as, I guess 2018, and this is, we don't campaign here. It's a nonpartisan role that you're applying for if you go for reelection.
Yes, it is nonpartisan.
Nonpartisan, mm-hmm. But do you envision yourselves, what do you see? Where can you take your leadership to make the biggest difference going forward?
I would actually like to seek appointment on the state board. The State Board of Education, basically everything, they have given us a lot of the mandates. And I don't think they have a real parent perspective and a real local board what those mandates have done to local boards of education. And I think that's a real gap on the state board. And I feel like I could bring that perspective based on my either role in the community as well as being on a local board of ed for 8 years in a very nonpartisan fashion. And we as a board have really been able to come together across a lot of difficult issues. And we're able to leave everything in the boardroom. We all bring our varied perspectives, but we can actually still come together as a board and make those decisions. And whether I agree with the decision or not, we move on to the next thing. And I, you know, will go out to lunch with a couple of them afterward who we voted differently on, you know, including Brad. He's one of my best friends, but we don't vote very similarly a lot. So it's just a very unique situation. I've really learned to work with people. I've learned to work with our staff, and I have such a respect for education. I want to be able to bring that voice to the state board. That would be what I would want to do. So, yeah.
Well, I wish you well with that. I think that, you know, as we grow as leaders, I think it's always important to look forward, to look back. And look forward and to see where we can continue to make a difference if we so choose. So when you look at parent-teacher associations and getting others like you involved in, at the board level, you know, I think one thing we certainly want to do is make sure we invite people to attend a Board of Education meeting. You might want to pack a lunch and
dinner. And snacks. And
breakfast.
Our last meeting went to 11:40, and we only had two topics on our agenda that evening.
Okay, something's got to give on that one.
Right. Again, we encourage community involvement. Yes.
So, and people do go and testify. I've been in the room when you guys are dealing with some stuff, and it's an interesting outing. But you said they're also making some changes to the structure so that maybe they won't be going quite as late. When do they start?
I'm really excited. Our first curriculum and instruction committee meeting is this Wednesday, and that was something I served on when I first got on the board. We kind of got rid of them because of Common Core. There was just so many changes happening that the whole board needed to hear about. But now we can be able to have a lot of that curriculum talk during those meetings, and then a policy committee is the other committee.
So it's Wednesday at what time?
Wednesday at 2:30, our regular meeting starts, and we actually for the evening meeting we will be talking about our master plan. So that's where we are going to have a lot of the results for our PARC testing, where we are as a system, where we want to move forward. It'll talk about a lot of the things that, you know, I kind of briefly touched upon today about where we as a system see ourselves. So it's our master plan that we will then be submitting to the state.
Where would someone get information about your schedule so that they can see if it works for them to attend?
If you go to fcps.org and then you click on the Board of Ed tab, and then you will be able to see, if you click on the agendas, that will bring up all the current agendas of what we're going to be talking about. It links to our master plan, the 140-page easy reading document. Feel free to take a look.
Very good. Well, this has been wonderful. You've been just a delight and so fun to talk to, and really, as we say, a subject matter expert.
I have a lot of experts that I listen to. I wouldn't call myself an expert.
Well,
but
you've become that, though, as a voice on the board.
I've learned a lot.
Yeah, and we all do as we plug in to different leadership roles. So get involved for people who are listening. It's great to have your voice be heard at these events so that you are representing other people like you in the community. This is Success Happens. I'd like to thank Frank for being on the board today and wishing Bob well in his health recovery. And we will talk to you next week, Saturday morning, 9 a.m. on Free Talk 930 WFMD.